Hello and welcome to the first hour of the Arizona Republic for Sunday, January 5th, 2025. This is Carrie, your volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. We'll begin this first hour with a front page article from the Republic entitled Revisiting an Insurrection. This is by Ronald J. Hansen. The subtitle is What Happened to Arizonans Who Rioted at the U.S. Capitol? Arizona's Jacob Angeli, better known as the QAnon Shaman, became the worldwide face of the January 6, 2021 U.S. Capitol riot. He unforgettably roamed the Capitol bare-chested in a bearskin headdress with horns and his face painted red, white, and blue. He toted a six-foot spear and roared into a megaphone. 4 years later, Angeli could symbolize the event's complicated aftermath. He expressed momentary contrition, went to prison for 27 months, and, after his release, seemed unmoved by the entire experience. He briefly attempted to run for Congress but didn't qualify for the ballot. In August, the judge in Angeli's case ordered the government to give back his spear and headdress. Alex Kaiser, a history professor at Harvard University, who has taught a class there about the riot and reflected on it in essays, said there is a schizoid quality to the attack by a mob of then-President Donald Trump supporters. There is nothing like a uniform view, and that's even more true right now. A very large portion of the country, maybe a majority, sees what happened on January 6th as a stain on our democratic record, he said. And there's another large portion of the population which believes all those people who have been jailed or convicted should be pardoned, and it was a legitimate protest against a stolen election. For the most part, those diverging memories have simply solidified over the last 4 years. Monday marks the fourth year since America ended a 220-year tradition of peacefully transferring power. On this anniversary, Congress will affirm voters' decision to send Trump back to the White House. Did January 6th matter to voters? Arizona, the closest contest in the country in 2020, was the swing state that moved the most toward Trump in 2024. It is an outcome that might suggest a collective indifference to the Capitol riot, but that may oversimplify the matter, said Samara Klar, a political science professor at the University of Arizona. It's always hard to know what the counterfactual might have been, she said. Trump won the popular vote in November by about 1.5 percentage points, one of the smaller margins in the nation's history, and with the national mood decidedly against President Joe Biden. It's possible that if Trump hadn't engaged in that kind of behavior, he would have done much better in the election, Klar said. So I don't know if we could necessarily write off the impact of January 6th on voting behavior. There is still some evidence that it reduced votes for Donald Trump. Klar said the pull of partisan politics helps explain a kind of national dissonance on the riot. We have two parties at the national level that are so polarizing that voters are willing to overlook problems with their own party because they are sufficiently opposed to the other party, she said. I find in my own research that this willingness to overlook democratic norms increases as people feel increasingly hostile toward the other party, Klar said. For Republicans, that has meant being unbothered by the violence and radical aim of the riot. For Democrats, it explains a willingness to pack the U.S. Supreme Court in an effort to overcome its conservative supermajority, she said. Both Democrats and Republicans are willing to engage in typically undemocratic activities when it benefits their own party, Klar said. Public opinion has evolved since the riot. Public opinion has shifted considerably from the outset of the riot. Within days, former U.S. Representative Kevin McCarthy, Republican of California, then the House GOP's leader, and U.S. Senator Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky, then the leader of Senate Republicans, blamed Trump for instigating the riot. I've had it with this guy, McCarthy privately fumed to Republicans in a recorded conversation obtained in 2022 by the New York Times. By the first anniversary of the riot, only one House Republican, Representative Brian Fitzpatrick, Republican of Pennsylvania, joined Democrats to commemorate the day. By the third year, in 2024, a USA Today Suffolk University poll showed 52% of Republican voters had no confidence there would be a fair election later that year. A Washington Post University of Maryland survey at the same time found that a quarter of Americans said the FBI probably or definitely instigated the attack. Of course, there's no evidence of that, and more than 1,000 criminal arrests point to the actions of Trump's zealous fans following his orders to fight for the country that day. Rioters included at least 8 from Arizona. At least 8 Arizonans faced prosecution for their roles in the riot. Another 3 people were arrested in Arizona and faced similar charges. Some were locked behind bars for their crimes. Others received probationary punishment. None agreed to speak to the Arizona Republic about their actions then or their feelings about it today. There are few signs, however, that they regret their actions. Trump has said he would pardon those involved in the riot and hinted at it again in December after Biden pardoned his son, Hunter Biden, for illegally buying a gun and for tax evasion. Does the pardon given by Joe to Hunter include the J6 hostages who have now been imprisoned for years? Such an abuse and miscarriage of justice, Trump wrote in a social media post. Angeli, who is charged under his legal name Jacob Chansley, struck a humble tone before he was sentenced. I am truly, truly repentant for my actions, because repentance is not just saying you're sorry, he said in court. Repentance is apologizing and then moving in the exact opposite direction of the sin that you committed. In retrospect, I would do everything differently on January 6th. After leaving prison in March 2023, he told YouTube journalist Andrew Callahan his punishment had not changed his beliefs. Like, regarding politics? No, Angeli scoffed. If anything, it just reinforced the notion that the government has corruption at some of the highest levels and that needs to change. Israel Mattson is among those convicted in connection with the Capitol riot and hoping to receive a presidential pardon from Trump. He wandered through the Capitol but didn't battle police or damage property, according to the government's charges against him. An Ogden, Utah resident at the same time who later moved to Kingman when he was arrested, Mattson said Trump's 2024 victory, in addition to the 2020 contest that he maintains was improper, shows that the people who marched on the Capitol were justifiably indignant. At the time, the deck was stacked against anything actually being able to change, but you wanted to be there just to send a message, Mattson said. As far as me, there wasn't any standing or engaging with police or any of that kind of stuff. Initially, Mattson said he didn't expect those who went inside the Capitol to face prosecution, just as few people who violently protested after the 2020 slaying by police of George Floyd didn't face prison terms. I'm thinking in light of all of that political atmosphere towards rioting, they're not going to arrest or charge everyone here, he said. Mattson, who operates a business restoring vintage Airstreams, said he doesn't regret going to the Capitol and thinks the events of January 6th were overblown by the media and Democrats. I firmly believe that I don't think Americans broadly ever saw the big deal that it was hyped up so hard to be, that it was worse than 9/11 and Pearl Harbor, Mattson said. I think that overreaction and the attempt by the left to turn it into this monstrous event really probably jaded most Americans into not caring about it at all. Mattson said he hopes to receive a pardon from Trump. I expect one and absolutely want one, he said. It would definitely feel like vindication, and it would bring a lot of peace and resolution to me. I went there for Trump. So to be recognized by him after what we went through would make it that much more worth it. other Arizonans jailed for January 6th involvement. Phoenix resident Edward Vallejo drew one of the stiffest sentences of those with Arizona ties. He was convicted of seditious conspiracy in the same case with Stuart Rhodes, the founder of the far-right Oath Keepers militia. Rhodes received the longest sentence of anyone connected to the violence, 18 years in prison. By contrast, Vallejo, an Army veteran, received a 3-year prison term for his involvement. Vallejo and others planned for months to amass an armed, quick-reaction force outside Washington to help prevent a change in the presidency. The group traveled to the area with paramilitary gear and supplies, including firearms, tactical vests with plates, helmets, and radio equipment. On the morning of the riot, Vallejo called into a podcast hosted by a longtime Arizona libertarian figure, Ernest Hancock. He told the host that if the day didn't result in what he considered a just result for America, ostensibly the overturning of the election results, that's going to be the declaration of a guerrilla war. Vallejo remains in prison and is scheduled for release in April. Jacob Zirkle of Bowie marched to the Capitol with members of the far-right Proud Boys organization and pushed at least 3 officers on a plaza outside the building in encounters documented by police body cameras. Zirkle told investigators that he pushed into some police officers and that he probably did something dumb, though he maintained he was trying to protect himself, not fight the police. Zirkle received a 2-year prison term and is scheduled to be released in September. Gilbert Mann calls himself a J6 hostage. Joshua Knowles of Gilbert is in a federal prison in Adelanto, California, 4 months into a 7-month sentence. In an online appeal for financial help, Knowles said he and his mother attended Trump's rally near the White House in Washington, D.C., because they had concerns about the 2020 election results. After the rally, he said he walked to the Capitol with the crowd. The Capitol Police shook hands with the people, told us where we could go and where we couldn't, he wrote. For all of my 7 minutes inside, there were a few angry protesters, but the majority were wandering around looking at this historic building. Knowles, who called himself a J6 hostage, said the police launched an all-out assault on the American people. A female officer began beating me with her steel baton on my backside. Somehow, I was able to turn around and place my PVC flagpole between us and begged her to stop. I explained I was moving away as quickly as I could. The male officer next to her agreed with me, and the beating stopped. The government charged Knowles with a municipal curfew violation after he repeatedly refused to disperse. He was later indicted on federal misdemeanor charges in connection with the riot. He said he faced the threat of a felony indictment if he didn't plead guilty to the misdemeanors. By then, Knowles was getting divorced and had a daughter with health problems. He pleaded guilty to the lesser crimes and received far more time than the few days he expected. Knowles' mother updated his online page after Trump's reelection. A few tears came to his and my eyes, expressing the joy, thrill, and vindication of the last 4 years, she wrote. The J6ers are on a road to freedom. Promises made, promises kept. It is a travesty, the injustice, what the GOV has done to innocent Americans. But one day soon, they will be vindicated and set free. Cottonwood Man, I am here for Trump. Angeli wasn't the only Arizonan in distinctive garb. Cottonwood resident Nathan Wayne Entrekin, 51, dressed as Captain Moroni, a figure from the Book of Mormon who fought for self-determination for the Nephites. In an outfit others mistook as Julius Caesar, Entrekin walked through the Capitol taking selfies, talking on his phone to his mother, and delighting in the chaos of the moment. He saw people ransacking congressional offices and left the Capitol once and returned again minutes later. Entrekin's cell phone provided visual proof of his presence, authorities found. I'm here for Trump. 4 more years, Donald Trump, our rightful president, Entrekin said in one video. In another, he seemingly complained to Congress, possibly about COVID-19 restrictions. Why can't you people just do what we want? Why do you got to make it so hard? Why do you take our money and use it for nefarious purposes? Every man, woman, and child should have a house in this free nation. You shut us down and you stay up? Entrekin received a 45-day jail sentence. Tucson siblings get light sentences. Tucson residents Corey and Felicia Conold got similarly short jail terms for their activities around the Capitol. The siblings met with a group that included 4 members of the Kansas City chapter of the Proud Boys. Their group met with Proud Boys from other parts of the country on the National Mall, then headed to the Capitol, where they were among the first to breach the police barriers, according to government records. Just as the first police line was being overwhelmed, the Conolds made their way to the front of the crowd and became some of the first rioters to trample over the toppled barricades, the government wrote in a summary of their case. The siblings then made their way past multiple subsequent lines of barricades. They made it into the Capitol, and Corey Conold took home a souvenir of the day, a police helmet. On social media afterward, Felicia Conold cast herself as influencing the crowd storming the Capitol. I never could have imagined having that much of an influence on the events that unfolded that day, she wrote, according to the government. Dude, people were willing to follow. You F lead, and everyone had my back. Dude, we F did it. In an online request for financial help, Felicia Conold described herself as a fellow American with a heart of gold dealing with an impossible situation. She said she stood up for the hope of helping all Americans on January 6th. She received a 45-day sentence, which she served while pregnant, and her brother received a 30-day term. Micaiah Joel Jackson, 28, of Levine, also received a probationary sentence after he walked with Proud Boys into the Capitol, events he documented on his phone and social media that day. The former Marine insisted he was not a member of the Proud Boys, though he wore a blaze orange band on his arm like the others with the group and traveled within feet of their national leader, Joseph Biggs. Weeks before the riot, Trump posted a message vowing that the fight had only begun. Jackson responded to that message with one of his own. You tell us when, sir. You are the commander-in-chief. We will not concede. Before his case was resolved, he described his case on social media as part of a political persecution and said he had all the evidence of BLM, Antifa, DC cops, and non-Trump extremists causing the mayhem. The government did not accuse Jackson of striking authorities or destroying property, and he cooperated with its investigation of the matter. Others arrested in Arizona. 3 of the men nabbed in Arizona lived out of state. A Mississippi man arrested at his sister's house in Glendale drew the longest sentence of any of those arrested in Arizona, 78 months in prison. James Burton McGrew is a former Marine Corps veteran who went to the Capitol with his mother to, quote, express our voice that day on election integrity, end quote. He was easily identified by a stomach tattoo that reads King James, and was evident as he lifted his shirt in the Capitol to wipe police chemicals from his eyes. A government summary of his actions noted that he aggressively approached law enforcement officers, yelling statements such as, we're coming in here whether you like it or not, and fight with us, not against us. He struck 2 police officers trying to push back the crowd in the Capitol and took a baton from one of them, which he gave back. Later, he threw a wooden handrail with metal brackets on it at police. He began serving his prison sentence in January 2023 and is scheduled for release on January 6, 2027, the 6th anniversary of the insurrection. In a June online appeal for financial support, his mother said her son stood up for what he believed and meant no harm that day. A supporter said McGrew was seriously wounded in 2005 from an improvised explosive device while fighting in Fallujah, Iraq. In a July 2023 online post attributed to him, James McGrew described himself as a political prisoner with no evident regret. "I wanted to give America a personable, funnier, lighter look into the hearts and minds of the J6 political prisoners whom I have the honor of calling my friends and family," he wrote. McGrew also wrote about what he called his journalistic interviews with others locked up for similar crimes. At one point, they found a rodent in their prison facility and dubbed it MAGA Mouse. "Coming down here wasn't right." Andrew Hatley, a South Carolina trucker, was arrested in Eloy. Authorities identified him at the Capitol in part by a distinctive cowboy hat that he also wore in a social media profile picture. Initially, Hatley, whose face was partially blocked by the green respirator he was wearing, insisted he wasn't there. "I'd like to set the record straight. I don't have that kind of motivation for lost causes. I just don't care enough anymore, certainly not enough for all that," he wrote. Another man photographed alongside him in the Capitol confirmed Hatley was there, and an app on his phone that tracked his movements also showed his phone at the Capitol. He received a probationary sentence after expressing remorse and disavowing the violence at the Capitol. "I have spent most of the last 5 years mostly alone in the truck," Hatley said before he was sentenced, according to media accounts. "I don't have the same baseline as other people for dealing with people. When I get near people, I just follow what they do." "Going in there, the Capitol, wasn't right," he continued. "Probably coming down here wasn't right to begin with. I wish I hadn't. Grains of sand make a heap, and I'm one of them." Former Utah resident Israel Mark Mattson was arrested in Kingman, where he lives now. He entered the Capitol with a crowd and had a megaphone with him. He walked through the area but didn't fight or further damage the area and said he left when he heard reports that someone had been shot based on the government's summary of his actions. Mattson received a probationary sentence. Keyser, the Harvard history professor, said future judgment on the riot could depend on how Trump fares in a second term, along with the nation. "My guess is that my fellow historians will say we have to wait a while to see. Was this some weird blip or foreshadowing of other things?" he said. Keyser said Trump might have again challenged the results of the election if he had lost in November. Trump didn't lose, but others might claim stolen elections again anyway. "Whether that will persist, we just don't know," Keyser said. "I have a feeling that it will persist, but there's no way I can approve something about the future." And that article was entitled "Revisiting an Insurrection," and that was by Ronald J. Hansen. We're going to move on now to Valley and State News with this next article entitled "Retail, Housing, and Mill Avenue Projects Reshaping Tempe." This is by Sam Kamak. Tempe residents can expect to see multiple new developments and significant city projects begin to materialize throughout 2025, including a new shopping center in South Tempe and an apartment complex that's slated to bring more than 100 new affordable housing units. The Arizona Republic asked the city of Tempe what three projects residents should keep their eyes out for in 2025. Here's what Tempe residents can expect to see crop up in the new year. 104 new affordable housing units. La Victoria Commons is an upcoming housing complex that will be situated on about 3 acres of land near the intersection of East Apache Boulevard and North Price Road. The complex will have 104 apartment units for low-income renters, meaning a family of four would have to make less than $74,000 per year in order to qualify. It will also have 19 townhouses for sale to lower-income individuals and a health clinic that will be open to the general public. The project is one of the biggest to date that has received some funding as part of Hometown for All, which is Tempe Mayor Corey Wood's flagship affordable housing program. COPA Health and Newton Community Development Corporation are overseeing the La Victoria Commons project. Tempe spokesperson Susie Stechner said the complex is expected to wrap up construction in the winter of 2025. South Tempe Square Project. A new shopping center will start construction in southern Tempe at the corner of East Warner Road and Rural Road, just across the street from Postino South Tempe. Called South Tempe Square, it will sit on about 4 acres of land that's currently a dirt lot surrounded by residential neighborhoods. The center will have a 224-spot parking lot with about 27,000 square feet of restaurant and retail space. It's not yet clear what stores and restaurants will fill up those storefronts. South Tempe Square will begin construction during the first few months of 2025 and is slated to open in early 2026. Downtown Tempe Streetscape. One of the first city projects Tempe residents may notice in 2025 is the revamping of Mill Avenue between East University Drive and East 6th Street. It's one of the most used road segments in the city. The revamping is part of the city's Downtown Tempe Refresh Initiative. It's an effort to repave and add a slew of upgrades, from new landscaping to street lighting to Mill Avenue and 5th Street. It's the first major renovation to the roads in nearly 4 decades. The section of Mill between University and 6th Street is expected to get a makeover by February. It's not yet clear what other segments of Tempe's downtown roadway will get fixed up throughout 2025, but roadwork there is expected to continue all year. And that article was entitled Retail, Housing, and Mill Avenue Projects Reshaping Tempe, and that was by Sam Kamak. This next article is entitled Stunning Winter Road Trips and Getaways for Arizonans. This is by Zach Bradshaw. Snow is a magical thing. The incredibly soft and fluffy flakes can coat the ground and make areas look absolutely stunning. Plus, it's fun to play with. It really is the essence of winter. Too bad residents in Phoenix won't get any. While cities like Flagstaff, Pinetop Lakeside, and a few more mountainside locations will turn into a frozen paradise in the coming months, most of Arizona won't, barring some sort of miracle. Arizonans who want to see snow will just have to travel to get their fix. No worries, though, because there are plenty of quick day trips and weekend adventures allowing Arizonans to travel somewhere with snow. Here are a few ideas for quick travel options to go to places that will surely be covered in beautiful, magical snow this winter. Head to Flagstaff for a snowy ski paradise. The easiest and most well-known option is driving to nearby Flagstaff, about 2.5 hours from Phoenix by car. Flagstaff usually sees a lot of snow in the winter, making it one of Arizona's best snow destinations. Arizona Snow Bowl Ski Resort is up there, making it an ideal destination for skiers and snowboarders. Drive to Pinetop to ski and see an extraordinary light display. You could also drive up to Pinetop Lakeside, typically about 3.5 hours from Phoenix by car. The area typically receives a ton of snow in the winter and also has a nearby ski resort, Sunrise Park Resort. More Arizona spots that may see snow. Depending on the strength of the storm, cities like Sedona, Payson, Prescott, and Bisbee may see snow too. Each city boasts its own outdoor adventures, bustling shopping districts, and different ways to enjoy Arizona. And that article is entitled Stunning Winter Road Trips and Getaways for Arizonans, and that was by Zach Bradshaw. We're approximately 29 minutes past the hour in this first hour of the Arizona Republic for Sunday, January 5th, 2025. Continuing on now with some tax news. This article is entitled Free Help, Other Useful Information as Tax Season Nears. This is by Russ Wiles. Flip the calendar over to a new year, and it's time to start thinking about filing income tax returns, at least for early birds. Actually, taxpayers have most of the year to get their records together and complete their returns without penalties, though most people finish the task by the normal April 15th deadline. If you expect to receive a refund, that's added incentive to get the job done early. There aren't a whole lot of major changes in store for the upcoming filing season affecting individuals. Here are the basics and information on a few key adjustments and updates. When can you file taxes in 2025? As of the end of 2024, the Internal Revenue Service hadn't yet announced the date when it would start accepting returns. For the filing season that began in early 2024, January 29th was the start date. For 2025, it's likely to be January 27th. You may start to organize tax records before then, although employers aren't required to mail or deliver W-2 forms containing salary and withholding information until the end of January. When are tax returns due in 2025? April 15th is the normal filing deadline, although taxpayers may receive an automatic 6-month extension, taking them until October 15th by filing Form 4868. The IRS processed about 267 million returns over the past year, and the total likely will rise a bit for the next one. How much money does the IRS take in each year? The agency said it collected $5.1 trillion for the fiscal year that ended September 30, 2024, yet Americans should have paid more. The difference between what the government collects and what Americans owe but don't pay voluntarily or on time is known as the tax gap. The IRS estimated it at around $700 billion for the most recent year. Do most taxpayers receive a refund? Yes, roughly 2 in 3 taxpayers receive refunds. The average amount for individuals in the most recent year was $3,143. Can I prepare my return for free? Yes, the IRS has been pushing its direct file program, which will be available in 24 states, including Arizona, for the upcoming filing season. Also worth considering is the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance, or VITA, program. With this, available to most moderate income taxpayers, you can receive in-person help from volunteers trained by the IRS. For the most recent filing season, the program was geared to taxpayers earning roughly $64,000 or less in income. I hope this year we don't have any empty slots, said Bob Schmidt, a volunteer who has been helping to prepare returns through the program for 26 years. Only a fraction of eligible taxpayers use this service, which is available at libraries, schools, and other public venues. Does the IRS operate offices that are open to the public? Yes, and many allow taxpayer visits, although sometimes appointments are required. The IRS operates 7 offices in Arizona, including 3 around Metro Phoenix. They are at 4041 North Central Avenue in Phoenix, 1818 East Southern Avenue in Mesa, and 7350 West Camino San Javier in Glendale. The agency offers a tax office locator on its website, https://apps.irs.gov/app/office-locator/. What are the odds of facing an audit? About 1 in 200, based on information from recent years. Of the returns that are called into question, most involve correspondence audits in which the IRS sends a letter asking for clarification or more information. In other words, the chances of being called into an IRS office are minuscule for most individual taxpayers. What are some of the tax changes for this filing season? One change is an increase in the mileage allowed for the business use of a vehicle to 70 cents a mile, up from 67 cents. Many others are inflation adjustments. For example, the standard deduction amounts for 2024 have risen modestly to $14,600 single taxpayers, $21,900 for heads of household, and $29,200 for married couples filing jointly, with slightly higher amounts for people who are 65 or older or blind. The majority of taxpayers who don't itemize can take the standard deduction. Some taxpayers could get up to $1,400 from the IRS. While it is not tied to the upcoming tax filing season, the IRS recently announced it would send pandemic-related payments worth up to $1,400 per recipient to people who qualified for this tax credit but didn't claim it on their 2021 returns. The payments will be sent automatically to about 1 million taxpayers and perhaps 20,000 or so in Arizona. And that article was entitled, Free Help, Other Useful Information as Tax Season Nears, and that was by Russ Wiles. Our next article is entitled Grand Canyon Among Deadliest U.S. Parks in Winter. This is by Shelby Slade, Colby Phillips, and James Ward. The Grand Canyon was named the fifth deadliest national park to visit in the winter, a new study shows. According to the findings, Grand Canyon National Park had 5.45 deaths per 10 million visitors, 185% higher than the national average of 2.94 winter deaths per 10 million visitors. John Foy and Associates analyzed mortality data provided by the U.S. National Park Service to determine the number of deaths in parks between November and February from 2007 to 2023. Here's what to know about deaths at the Grand Canyon and national parks across the United States. 10 most dangerous U.S. parks during winter. Number 1, Sequoia and Kings Canyon National Parks, 12.19 deaths per 10 million visitors. Number 2, Mount Rainier National Park, Washington, 8.55 deaths per 10 million visitors. 3, Lake Mead National Recreation Area, Nevada, 6.23 deaths per 10 million visitors. Number 4, Death Valley National Park, 5.87 deaths per 10 million visitors. Number 5, Grand Canyon National Park, Arizona, 5.45 deaths per 10 million visitors. 6, Yosemite National Park, 5.23 deaths per 10 million visitors. 7, Mojave National Preserve, 4.36 deaths per 10 million visitors. 8, Cape Hatteras National Seashore, North Carolina, 4.35 deaths per 10 million visitors. 9, Big South Fork National River and Recreation Area, Tennessee, 4.24 deaths per 10 million visitors. And number 10, Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore, Michigan, 4.04 deaths per 10 million visitors. How many people have died at the Grand Canyon? With an average of 5 million visitors per year, the National Wonder experienced a total of 10 guest fatalities in 2023 and 11 the year before. Since the 19th century, over 900 people have died at Arizona's largest tourist attraction, averaging 12 deaths per year. The most common type of death, according to statistics, are airplane and helicopter crashes, followed by falling. The report goes on to state that falls can be both accidental and intentional, with death by suicide occurring more often than the former. The report highlighted environmental deaths such as dehydration and starvation, along with drownings in the Colorado River, as additional factors contributing to the park's mortality rate. How to stay safe. Some tips from the Grand Canyon National Park Rangers include: stay on designated trails and walkways, and always keep a safe distance of at least 6 feet from the edge of the rim. In areas where there is a railing or fence, do not climb over the barrier. Keep an eye on all of the people in your group, especially small children. Make sure that your travel companions have both feet firmly planted on pavement or developed trails at all times. Do not run, jump, or perform physical stunts when near the rim. Do not back up without first looking at where you are going. Arizona's temperature can be deceiving and deadly. Hike when it's cold outside. Try early mornings and evenings when there's more shade. Wear proper shoes, clothing, a hat, and sunscreen. Hydrate before you go. Have plenty of water, more than you think you need. turn around and head back to the trailhead before you drink half of your water. Carry a mobile phone and remain in contact with others. Hike with others. If hiking solo, tell someone your start and end times and location. Do you have a medical condition? Asthma, heart problems, diabetes, knee or back problems? Don't push yourself. Even trained athletes have been caught off guard by getting dehydrated on Arizona trails. Enjoy the Sonoran Desert's beautiful and undeveloped landscape, but please stay on designated trails. Don't be that person, the one who wasn't prepared, shouldn't have been there for health reasons, or ignored safety guidelines. Be the responsible hiker who takes a hike and does it right. Crisis hotlines for Arizonans. Services include dial 211 at any time to reach the free 211 Arizona Information and Referral Service and connect with free resources available locally throughout the state. Solari Crisis and Human Services offers a free 24-hour statewide crisis line. Dial 844-534-HOPE-4673. Help is also available by texting HOPE to 4HOPE, that's 4-H-O-P-E, which is 4673 in numbers. Dial 988 to reach the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. Help is available in English and Spanish. It's free and confidential for those in distress who need prevention or crisis resources for themselves or loved ones. La Frontera Impact Suicide Prevention Center's Crisis Line serves Maricopa and Pinal counties. And that article is entitled Grand Canyon Among Deadliest U.S. Parks in Winter. And that was by Shelby Slade, Colby Phillips, and James Ward. We're approximately 42 minutes past the hour in this first hour of the Arizona Republic. We're going to turn now to articles from USA Today and National and World News, with two front page articles, with the first on the U.S. House of Representatives and the second on the New Orleans attack. The first one is entitled, Jeffries to Wield Greater Power, with a subtitle, GOP's Slim Majority Boosts His Leverage. This is by Richard Cowan. Democrat Hakeem Jeffries could be poised to wield more power than a minority leader typically enjoys in the U.S. House of Representatives, with President-elect Donald Trump's fractious Republicans holding a thin majority. Republican Speaker Mike Johnson turned to him more than a dozen times during the 2023-2024 session to provide Democratic votes to pass critical legislation, including in May when Jeffries helped Johnson hold off an effort by hardline Republicans to end his speakership. During Friday's vote to re-elect Johnson, all 215 Democrats voted for their 54-year-old leader from New York, as they've done repeatedly through speaker fights over the past 2 years. Johnson was re-elected speaker, but only after the vote had to be held open for a prolonged period amid attempts by Trump and Johnson to cajole two of the three Republicans who voted against him to switch their positions and propel him to victory. Republicans will initially hold a 219-215 majority. I think we have a lot more leverage there than we had in 2017, Democratic Representative Donald Beyer said in an interview last month. That year marked the start of Trump's first term in office, when his Republicans also controlled the House, but by a 40-seat margin. To be sure, Jeffries' powers and those of Democratic Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer will be limited. Republicans will try to pass much of Trump's legislative agenda on party-line votes, bypassing Senate rules that require 60 of the 100 members to agree on most legislation, as Democrats did during President Joe Biden's first 2 years in office. In the House, Jeffries' powers mainly will be limited to exploiting divisions among Republicans that necessitate Democratic votes to pass legislation. It is a tactic Jeffries deployed more than a dozen times since Republicans took control of the House in January 2023 on bills ranging from government funding to an $895 billion bill authorizing military programs and emergency aid for Ukraine's war effort against Russia. The upcoming battle over Trump's push to renew expiring tax cuts, which were enacted in 2017 and aimed mainly at corporations and the wealthy, gives Democrats hope that Jeffries can win concessions. These include an expanded child tax credit for low-income people and a repeal of a cap on deductions for state and local taxes. Mindful of voters' backlash against high consumer prices under Biden's watch, Jeffries used a speech during the first meeting of the newly elected House to proclaim, "For far too long in this country, the cost of living has gone up, but the size of the middle class has come down." Citing high costs of housing, groceries, and child care, Jeffries added, "America is too expensive." While he said Democrats stand ready to work in a bipartisan way with Republicans, he warned, "We will push back against far-right extremism whenever necessary." He singled out a need to defend Social Security retirement and Medicare health care benefits from cuts. He and his lieutenants have sketched out additional areas of possible bipartisan compromise, which include protecting people brought to the United States illegally when they were children from deportation, revamping U.S. asylum law, and updating the visa system for immigrant farm workers. Can't be steamrolled. What remains to be seen is whether Jeffries will manage to forge a working relationship with Trump. The two New York City natives collaborated during Trump's 2017-2021 term on criminal justice reforms. But since then, Washington partisanship has only deepened, and former Speaker Nancy Pelosi, a Democrat, had a contentious relationship with Trump. Last month, when Trump tried to force passage of a controversial debt limit increase as part of a retooled stopgap funding bill, Democrats balked and were joined by about three dozen disgruntled Republicans. "We showed that we can't be steamrolled," said veteran Democratic Representative Debbie Dingell. The chaos raised questions over whether Trump had needlessly expended post-election capital before his presidency had even begun and now might have to lower his sights. "I don't think so. He's still strong. People still love him back home. That's all that really matters," GOP Representative Tim Burchett of Tennessee told reporters. And that article is entitled, "Jeffries to Wield Greater Power," and that was by Richard Cowan. Our next front-page article from USA Today is entitled, "Planned Barriers Only Crash Rated to 10 Miles Per Hour," with the subtitle, "City Prioritized Ease of Operation Records Show." This is by Brian Thievenot and Chris Kirkham. Months before the deadly New Orleans vehicle attack on New Year's Day, the city modeled scenarios for how an attacker could enter Bourbon Street at various intersections in a crew cab Ford F-150 similar to the one used to kill 14 people and injure dozens more. Engineers found such a pickup could enter the crowded tourist strip at speeds ranging from 12 to 70 miles per hour. And yet city officials are now installing new street barriers that can only withstand 10-mile-per-hour impacts, according to an April city-contracted engineering analysis and city bid documents. Those new barriers, known as bollards, had not yet been installed on Bourbon Street on New Year's, but are planned to be completed by the February 9th NFL Super Bowl in New Orleans. The documents reviewed by Reuters, which have not been previously reported, make clear that the system won't be able to prevent vehicle attacks at moderate to high speeds. In selecting the new bollard system, the city prioritized ease of operation over crashworthiness of the new bollard system because of chronic problems in operating the old one, according to the documents and a source with direct knowledge of the city's Bourbon Street security planning. Unlike some pedestrian-only zones, such as in New York City's Times Square, Bourbon Street is open to regular vehicle traffic for much of the day, requiring city officials to block parts of it off from surrounding streets each evening. Since the New Year's Day attack, New Orleans officials have faced scrutiny over whether they left citizens vulnerable as crews were removing old bollards and installing new ones. But neither barrier system would have prevented the deadly attack, according to the source and a Reuters review of the city documents. The city currently has no bollards at Canal and Bourbon Streets, where the attacker entered, but the roadway was blocked by an SUV police cruiser parked sideways on New Year's. Attack suspect Shamsuddin Jabbar, a U.S. combat veteran from Texas, exploited another vulnerability in the city's security planning. He squeezed his 7-foot-wide pickup onto an 8-foot-wide sidewalk between a drugstore wall and the police vehicle, stomping the accelerator and plowing through the crowd at about 3:15 a.m. Jabbar died after the attack in a shootout with police. Federal authorities have said he had been radicalized and pledged allegiance to the Islamic State militant group. The city's security modeling and an engineer study conducted to help choose a new barrier system had only considered scenarios where a vehicle entered Bourbon Street on the roadway, not the sidewalk. A vehicle could not enter most Bourbon blocks on its skinny sidewalks, which have other existing barriers such as fire hydrants or balcony and streetlight posts, the source said. City officials would face tough meetings about the continuing vulnerabilities of the new bollards being installed now, the person said, which wouldn't have made any difference on New Year's. New Orleans city officials did not respond to detailed questions from Reuters about their Bourbon Street security planning and the decision to select barriers with a 10-mile-per-hour crash rating. The person with direct knowledge of the city's security planning emphasized the difficulty all cities face in protecting against vehicle attacks while preserving access to routine vehicle and pedestrian traffic, including accessible sidewalks for people with disabilities. The source said officials chose a bollard system rated for 10-mile-per-hour impacts from a company called 1-800-Bollards, Inc. City bidding documents, dated in August and September, sought an installer of the system, calling it the RCS-8040-S10 Removable Bollard. The city's April engineering analysis describes the same product as having an S10 crash rating and explains it can stop a 5,000-pound vehicle traveling 10 miles per hour. Crash ratings are specified as S10, 10-mile-per-hour impact, S20, 20-mile-per-hour impact, and S30, 30-mile-per-hour impact, the engineering analysis said. The source said a barrier rated for 10-mile-per-hour impacts could still slow or significantly damage a vehicle traveling faster. Representatives from 1-800-Bollards, Inc. declined to comment. Two of the Bourbon Street attack scenarios modeled by city-contracted engineers involved entering the street in a straight line without turning after building up speed. The study found a 2015 F-150 could achieve speeds of 50 miles per hour by accelerating from the stoplight across Canal Street, a wide boulevard with streetcar tracks in the median. The same vehicle could hit 70 miles per hour entering from the opposite end of the section of Bourbon Street that is protected by bollards. Jabbar drove a deadlier weapon than the truck used in the report's scenarios, a newer F-150 Lightning, a much faster, heavier, and quieter electric vehicle. During major events such as New Year's or Mardi Gras, the source said, city security plans call for parking large vehicles at the ends of Bourbon Street that are most vulnerable to high-speed vehicle attacks. But such measures, the person said, are not practical on a daily basis in the crowded tourist zone. Bourbon Street juice. Since at least 2020, city officials have studied how best to replace New Orleans' failing system of street barriers to protect against vehicle attacks, the source said. The city installed its first bollard system after coming under pressure in 2017 from federal officials to protect Bourbon Street following a string of vehicle attacks globally, including one in 2016 that killed 86 people and injured hundreds in Nice, France. New Orleans initially chose a system called the Healed HT2 Matador that allowed workers to move the barriers into position along tracks in the street, according to city documents. The source told Reuters the system was selected in large part because it had already been bid and priced by the federal government, allowing the city to install it faster. But the barriers proved problematic under the rigors of Bourbon Street, and often inoperable because the tracks became jammed with litter, including Mardi Gras bead necklaces. In addition, the mechanism to lock and unlock the barriers was embedded in the street and often became submerged in what the source called Bourbon Street juice, the mix of street grime, refuse, rainwater, spilled drinks, and occasionally vomit. To unlock it, you have to dip your hand into Bourbon Street juice, the person said. It was a disgusting job. You couldn't get anyone to do it. Heald, the maker of the bollards, said in a statement that they had not been shifted into place to block Bourbon Street before the attack and therefore did not malfunction. The system operates effectively, the company said, with basic maintenance and cleaning. Lighter weight bollards. Because of those problems, the city prioritized factors including ease of operation and maintenance over crash safety ratings in choosing a new system, according to the source in an April 2024 report from Mott McDonald, an engineering firm hired by the city to evaluate dozens of bollard options. Representatives of Mott McDonald did not comment. The report outlined three different crash rating standards for bollard systems. It concluded that the highest crash rating, which could withstand impacts from 15,000-pound vehicles traveling between 30 to 50 miles per hour, was not compatible with the city's needs to move the bollards every day. And that is all the time that we have for this article, which is entitled Plan Barriers Only Crash Rated to 10 Miles Per Hour by Brian Thievenot and Chris Kirkham. And this concludes the first hour of the Arizona Republic for January 5th, 2025. This has been Carrie, your volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. Now, if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcastinfo and audio/on-demand. You can also take Sun Sounds with you. You can get our stream and on demand on our new Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones. Now, please stay tuned for the second hour of the Arizona Republic.